Actually, my does address as well the overriding concerns of U.S. rulers to provide the pretexts for intervention. Robert Tucker, at the time an analyst for the military establishment in the U.S., reflecting on increasing concerns in U.S. business circles, addressed the technical feasibility of seizing Arab oil fields by direct military intervention. This is 1975, Oil, the Issue of American Intervention, in commentary, January 75, quote, "Without intervention, we face the distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. And he identified a, quote, convenient area at the Arab shoreline of the Gulf, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistadors, unquote. And he continues, the area that will satisfy our requirements extends from Kuwait down along the coastal region to Qatar. It is this mostly shallow coastal strip, less than 400 miles long, that provides 40% of OPEC production, 50% of total OPEC reserves, and he continues. It has no substantial centers of population, is without trees, and its effective control by us does not bear remote comparison with the experience of Vietnam, unquote. In 1975, they were preparing for the seizure of oil in the Gulf. Much as we see 9/11 as the opportunity of moment for them to do the same in the Caspian Sea. But in those days, as we discuss in Iraq and Kuwait, in 1975, Harper's Magazine published an analysis called Seizing Arab Oil by a man who was given the name Miles Ignotis, who is in fact Edward Luttwak, a leading CIA and Pentagon DIA functionary who was identified as a Pentagon consultant with intimate links to high-level U.S. policymakers. He set forth in 1975 the blueprint for Operation Desert Shield. We shall develop a rapid deployment and strike scenario. The 82nd Airborne Division, strengthened by air cavalry battalions, will embark on giant C-5 and C-141 jet transports. They will refuel at Israeli bases and drop paratroopers at key Saudi oil fields, installations, and airports. Escort to be provided by Phantom fighters based on Israeli fields and aboard carriers in the Arabian Sea. The Airborne Division will pave way for large Marine contingents who will arrive on the scene 72 hours later. And the U.S. National Security Council in 75 compiled a detailed review of a top-secret Department of Defense plan to invade Saudi Arabian oil fields that was codenamed Dahran Option 4, drawn up by the Pentagon, providing for a U.S. attack on the fields of Gawar, but they were looking for a pretext. They needed an opportunity to sell it to the public and to people around the world. Lawrence Mosher formulated the plan, circulating, this is now 1979, in Washington corridors, and he disclosed what military people call the US 100,000-man quick strike force, rapidly deployable anywhere in the air, anywhere by air, excuse me, is in place. But as one Pentagon official said, we need a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can sell using our quick strike force. It may turn out that the boogeyman will not be defined the same in Arabic as in English, unquote. This is January 19th, 1979. The same methodology, the same type of debate, the same scenario of this ruling class, the same informing of major events of seizing oil, of blood for oil, of massive occupations, of mass destruction. They need a boogeyman. They need someone to demonize. And they demonized Saddam Hussein, the person who was their man in Baghdad for 27 years, the man who was used and run by the CIA station in Baghdad, as it was disclosed in William Evelyn's book Ropes of Sand, the person who the CIA deployed for the assassination of Abdul Karim Qasim after he nationalized oil and legalized the national parties and the communist parties in the wake of the Iraqi Revolution, the man who carried out the torture and the suppression of trade unionists, of village leaders, of the political leadership of the secular, socialist, and nationalist movement of Iraq, hundreds of thousands of lives, over a million people tortured, detained at the behest of U.S. imperialism. Their man in Baghdad, Saddam Hussein, the figure who they armed, who they supplied, who they mobilized to try to detach the oil-producing province of Iran after the Iranian Revolution. And that is the figure who now is re-demonized for the pretext of, again, another invasion for the seizure of oil.
So how does Brent Scowcroft and James Baker, and as we can assume, former President George Bush Sr., think that George W. Bush, our current president, George Bush Jr., should go about it? What they are saying, basically, is that what he's doing is reckless. And what they propose is approaching the United Nations Security Council, giving it a fig leaf, a veneer of credibility, and in that way building a united response from the major regimes around the world. And what they Brent Scowcroft in the Wall Street Journal states, quote, "In any event, we should be pressing the United Nations Security Council to assist on an effective no-notice inspection regime for Iraq, anytime, anywhere, no permission required."
Maya, you
and
yes,
and then he goes on, "And if he refused, his rejection could provide the persuasive casus belli which many claim we do not now have." And James Baker then repeats it. Quote from James Baker, "The United States should advocate the adoption by the United Nations Security Council of a simple and straightforward resolution requiring that Iraq submit to intrusive inspections anytime, anywhere, with no exceptions, and authorizing all necessary means to enforce it." So in other words, Baker is saying, okay, you didn't get the message after Scowcroft laid it out for you. Here it is once again. And this leads, Ralph, to what you discovered about what the UN inspections were actually doing.
Well, actually, yes, of course, and I want to discuss precisely that. But before doing so, let me mention James Baker, as the Secretary of State under Bush Sr., is the very figure who enticed Saddam Hussein to rectify the seizure of the southern Iraqi area by the Kuwaiti emir, who had moved his borders 900 square kilometers north until it encompassed the southern tip of the Rumaila oil field, the largest oil field in Iraq and one of the largest in the entire Middle East. At that time, the Kuwaiti emir, who had $2.8 trillion in U.S. and European banks, according to the New York Times, talk about a 200-person feudal family having control of $3 trillion in flight capital. It defines the way in which these client regimes serve world imperialism and our U.S. rulers. At that time, after the emir had seized these additional areas of southern Iraq, the emir bought a company in Alhambra, California, the Santa Fe Drilling Corporation, and he spent over $2.4 billion for this company, and he purchased their, quote, slant or horizontal drilling equipment, with which he sucked out about $14 billion of Iraqi oil from the Rumaila oil fields. The principal directors of that company were Brent Scowcroft, then National Security Advisor of Bush Sr., and Robert Mosbacher, his Secretary of Commerce. And this is the context in which James Baker, their partners in crime, goes to Saddam Hussein and says, "You've been done wrong. Rectify your border with Iraq. The areas that just have been taken from you are legitimate areas for you to reoccupy and obtain." They suckered him in. Bush did it, Glasby did it, the then American ambassador, and Baker was explicit in doing it. They looked for the way in which to demonize Saddam Hussein, to provide the pretext, the boogeyman of which they spoke. And now one of the main ways in which they demonize Saddam Hussein is they speak of weapons of mass destruction and of biological warfare that he is supposedly engaged in doing. Well, there was a report by the United States Senate on May 25, 1994, the U.S. chemical and biological warfare-related dual-use exports to Iraq and their impact on the consequences of the Persian Gulf War, a report by Chairman Donald W. Regal, Jr., ranking member of the Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, in which they document that it was, in fact, the United States, the U.S. government, which sent to Iraq from 1985 through 1989 Bacillus anthracis for production of anthrax, Clostridium botulinum, a source of botulinum toxin, Histoplasma capsulatum, the cause of the disease that attacks lungs, brain, spinal cord, and heart, Brucella melanitensis, the bacteria that damages major organs, Clostridium perfringens, a highly toxic bacterium that produces systemic illness, Clostridium tetani, a highly toxigenic chemical, and Escherichia coli, which destroys human and bacterial DNA, and hundreds of pathogenic biologic agents shipped to Iraq during the 1980s, all of these supplied by the United States, all of these monitored by the American intelligence agencies, all of these biological agents produced in Fort Detrick, all of these biological instruments designed to be used by the Saddam Hussein regime against the Iranian population and, where needed, against resistance from his own populace, a design that was conceived in Washington, directed from Washington, supplied by Washington, and this very Senate committee then reveals that these, quote, microorganisms exported by the United States were identical to those the United Nations inspectors found and removed from the Iraqi biological warfare program, unquote. What does that mean? That the UN inspectors are grabbing the biological instruments and agents supplied by the United States and recapturing them, recovering them, and doing this as a rationale for a sanctions program that has not just destroyed the entire infrastructure of Iraq, but poisoned its water supply, engaged in what has been described as a genocide against the Iraqi population, as was documented by Thomas Nudge. The primary document, Iraq Water Treatment Vulnerabilities, has established that the sanctions were aimed at eliminating a clean water supply, virtually creating epidemics across the entire Iraqi landmass and territory.
With over a million people murdered as a result of these sanctions. It's not even appropriate to say killed. These are people who have been murdered by the U.S. Led sanctions imposed under the auspices of the United Nations. And so now we have Brent Scowcroft and James Baker saying, once again, let us use the United Nations. People, please, brothers and sisters, have no illusions about the United Nations. The remarkable call for anti-war demonstrations being promoted by Ramsey Clark and the International Action Center. It's important to have anti-war demonstrations. It is our move against the war that can put a halt to stopping the invasion. But let us have no illusions. The appeal by Ramsey Clark should not be to the United Nations.
No, actually,
it is the United Nations that is the cover for these invasions and the murder of the Iraqi people.
It reflects what I think it may absolutely be called the limits of liberalism. To invoke the category of, quote, international law, unquote, or the role of the United Nations, many of the people who have been active in the anti-war movement, from Noam Chomsky to Howard Zinn to Ramsey Clark to Edward Said, have done this. But I have to say that it is no service to the American people to create illusions about the United Nations. It is through the legitimizing of the United Nations that almost all of the major predations of the American rulers have proceeded. The destruction of Palestine took place under the aegis of the United Nations. The murder of Patrice Lumumba was carried out through a United Nations cover for the CIA murder of and destruction of the Congolese government and the independence movement in the Congo. The war in Korea was carried out under that rubric. The destruction of Somalia was legitimized by the United Nations sanction. And indeed, the sanctions themselves in Iraq are a United Nations administered operation, as are these inspections. These governments that comprise the member states of the United Nations have the same structures of rule as we in our own country have. It is a ruling class that services American imperialism, that makes these decisions, that controls these peoples, that is in power because of U.S. intelligence, is in fact sustained through the very kinds of operations that we have been describing, and that is why it is no service to our population or to our movement to create illusions about the very instrument that Scowcroft and Kissinger and Albright and Baker are now invoking, whose sanction they are going to obtain to create the consensus they require to carry out their operations in Iraq. We have to keep in mind that the biological weapons program of which they speak is a U.S. program inflicted on the population of Iraq and of Iran, involving the use of the most fiendish weapons against the Iraqi people themselves. The old world and new world screwworm that destroyed the livestock were biological agents that the American regime introduced into Iraq with a genocidal intent. An epidemic of congenital deformities in those born since 1991 has been documented by Dr. Haifa Asahini, the senior gynecologist at Children's Hospital in southern Iraq. Children born without brains, with giant heads, with stumpy arms, with missing heart valves, with thalidomide-like deformities, a threefold increase in recent years. This is the consequence of the willful biological warfare engaged in by U.S. rulers against the population of Iraq to create the conditions for their seizure of control of the oil reserves of 220 billion barrels in Iraq. It is blood for oil, it is imperial rule, it is mass murder, and its origins are from the United States.
And Ralph, one of the biological agents that you had not mentioned that the was sent to Iraq from the U.S. AMRID, that is Fort Detrick, was the West Nile virus. And the West Nile virus, until 3 years ago, hadn't appeared in the United States.